So I got to know the answer. Where are the people that think the LA Rams? Or let me say that who wants the Rams to win tonight? Okay, everybody. Rest of you, we're gonna pray for you. All right. It's good to have you here today and excited for where we're headed this morning as well. If you're excited for part three of Selfless, let me hear you make a little bit of noise. Come on. Like to have fun here. So, hey, let me start here as we hop into part three. There's something I need to get off my chest. There's something that happens at our house. I would imagine it has or does happen at your house as well. Even if you don't have kids, this probably has happened to you if you've been with kids or even when you were a kid. You can relate to this. It goes like this. I'm in my house doing my own thing, minding my own business. I'm fine. I'm happy. And my kids will come up to me and beg me to play a game with them called hide and seek. All right? Now, you guys, you're with me, right? Now, I'm fine. Again, I'm doing my own thing. They ask me to play hide and seek. I agree. And usually when we start out the game, I'm the seeker, and I will go and find them. Now, when I'm finding them, what I'm really doing is I'm doing reconnaissance work. You know what I'm talking about. You right, parents? Like, I'm looking for my spot. Like, I'm looking for them, but I'm also, where am I going to hide? And then when it's my turn to be the seek-e, I don't know if that's a word, but we're going to go with it. When it's my turn to be the seek-e, usually one or two kids will say, hey, Dad, we want to go hide with you. Now, I don't know where to put, like, my body that, like, they can't find me. And then I add in, like, one or two more bodies with me. But we try to figure out a way to make it work. So we will go hide together. I'll kind of stuff them in a spot and sort of cover them up. And then I'll go hide somewhere close because that's what they're asking me to do. And then I will cram my 37-year-old body into a place that's made for a pliable, flexible 10-year-old. You know what I'm saying? There's things crashing and breaking and slamming as I'm trying to, like, huddle myself into a spot. And then it goes quiet. You know what I'm saying? And you hear somebody yell out, ready or not, here I come. And then they start looking around, and eventually there's like this, you know, like they found one of, like, the seeker found one of the other kids. And then it gets quiet again, and I'll hear, like, snickering, you know what I'm saying? And, like, laughter. And what I figured out is that the found person actually helps the seeker find Dad. Now, they know where I hid. And so what I hear, it goes quiet, and I hear snickering. I'm like, there is some snot-nosed kid ratting me out. Like, it took so long to get in here, it's going to take the jaws of life to get me out, and they're ratting me out. The found person starts going and finding people. Anybody else relate to that? It's actually where we're going to end up today. We're going to go on a bit of a journey. We'll invite you to go with me. We're going to arrive at that simple thought that found people find people. Found people find people. You're welcome to grab out your teaching notes, and we're going to walk through this today. And here's where I want us to think about as we look back over the past couple of weeks. In week one, we talked about this idea of unleashing your inner hero. That to do that, you need to live boldly what you believe deeply. Well, how do you do that? Well, you love God wholeheartedly. You love people bravely. Last week, we were talking about when you get a lot of selfless people together and they serve together, you end up building a house of heroes. It's made up of these amazing people. They're like, whatever it takes, I want somebody else to experience the hope that I have found. And today I want to ask this question. It's simply this: where's the hero? Where's the hero? Look to somebody around you, find somebody around you, and just ask them the question, where's the hero? Go ahead and do it. Find somebody around you. You can look the other direction. You can cross the aisle. It's okay. Where's the hero? And some of your favorite superhero movies, It can kind of go down like this, right? The city's in shambles. There's an attack from some kind of an enemy. And people are asking, where's the hero? And the he or she will fly in and save the day. Well, as we're walking through this story today, Jesus is going to ask that question. Where's the hero? We're going to walk through it. And Jesus is going to be asking, where's the hero? That's incredibly important to where we are headed today. It's going to come in threes today. I'm going to walk in threes. You're going to be tired of me saying the word three and showing you threes. I don't think it's on accident. I think the Bible's doing this on purpose. And I want to deliver it in threes today because I think it'll help us to remember what our response to God is supposed to be as we're walking this out. There's going to be three different kinds of people in the real story. There's going to be a story that's really taking place. And then Jesus is going to tell us, guess how many? Three stories. So he's talking to people and he's going to tell three stories. And then in the final story, there's going to be three characters in three parts, I'm telling you. And then we're going to find our response to him in threes, in threes. And I want to walk through this. And I suspect that you probably have some kind of a memory. Even if you're not, you know, if you haven't spent much time in the church, you've probably heard of the third parable that we're going to walk through. We're going to go to it first, but let me give you a little bit of context. Jesus, it says, is talking to tax collectors and sinners. And I wonder if the sinners ever get like frustrated that they're always like lumped in with the tax collectors. You know what I'm saying? Preacher joke for the day. Not one person even snickered, but that's fine. I don't like you, but that's okay. No, you laughed a little bit. So tax collectors and sinners, Jesus is talking to them. And then it says that these religious people, Pharisees and teachers of the law is what it says. And today it would be like church people. It would be found people. That's what I'm going to call them today. There's these three groups. Jesus is talking, tax collectors and sinners, and then these Pharisees, teachers of the law, these found people come up, and they're mad at Jesus. They're offended at Jesus for talking to them. And so Jesus says, well, I'm going to tell you three stories to let you know why I'm talking to them. Right? Jesus came to show the heart of the Father. He's like, I'm going to show you the heart of the Father and what I came here to do. It's three stories. Let's start with the third one, then we'll come back around. In the third story, there's going to be three characters, right? There's going to be an older brother, a younger brother, and then there's also a father. The younger brother comes to the father. And I should say this, if you know this, if you're familiar with this story, you see it with some fresh eyes today. Even if you've heard this story dozens of times, I think God has something new to share with you. Every time we come to the scripture, especially if we're walking back around the beginning of the year and we're reading the Bible, reading plan again, always be asking, God, help me to see what you want to say to me today. The younger brother comes to his father and he says, give me my inheritance. Now, this is incredibly scandalous. He's supposed to wait till the father passes away to be able to receive what the father has for him. And yet he comes and he says, I want everything you're going to give me when you do kick the bucket. Give it to me now. I mean, this is like Prince Charles going to Queen Elizabeth. And like, you're never going to kick the bucket. You're going to live forever. Can I just have it now? I want to be king now. Can I have my inheritance? And so the father gives it to him. And not only does he give the inheritance to the younger son, he also divides it up and he gives it to the older one. If you look, it's there. The older son is faithful. He stays put. He works for his father, even though he already has everything that's coming to him. The younger son, it says, takes it and he goes to a faraway country and he squanders it, it says, in wild living. Short fashion, he squanders it away. Then there's a famine in this faraway country, and it ends up that this brother basically has nothing. The younger brother is so poor and so impoverished, he hires himself out to a farmer, and his job is to feed the pigs. And he's so hungry, it says that he longs just to eat what the pigs are putting in their mouths. It's part one. Part two, it says that the younger brother comes to his senses. What in the world have I done? I have a kind and good father, and yet I'm sitting here about to starve to death. I know what I'll do. I'll get up and I'll go back to my father. He prepares a speech. I'm going to tell my father, I am not worthy to be called a son, but can I just be one of your hired servants? I just want to be near you. You're such a good and kind father. I'll work for you for free. He's coming up with this story. He goes home to his father. It says that the father is waiting and watching day after day, just waiting for his younger son to come home. He mushes up all of his energy to run to the son. He runs to him and hugs him. The son tries to launch into his speech. I'm not worthy to be called your son. I just want to be a hired servant. The dad stops him. He just doesn't even listen. He just completely dismisses it. I'm not listening to your story. He gives him everything all over again. It says he gives him a robe and sandals. It gives him a signet ring. This would be like, you can take this into town and get whatever you want. Just say, you're with me, all right? He says, we're going to kill the fattened calf for you. Today, that would be like, you're getting new clothes, new kicks, a credit card, and we're catering from St. Elmo's. Like, we're throwing a big party. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's going after it. That's part two. Part three, we're going to come back to the older brother, the older son. It's kind of interesting what's been taking place in it. And it says this. So while all of this is happening, I like how this starts out. It's in verse 25. It says, meanwhile. So while all this is happening, right? Younger brother's doing his thing. He's out in a far country. He comes back. The brother doesn't know. Why? Because he's been faithful, working for dad. The older son was in the field. And when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. Can you hear it? Like, he's coming in, right? He's listening. Right? There's something happening. I don't know if they had bass back then, but they might have, all right? He's just some creative license, all right? He comes near and hears music and dancing. So he called one of his servants and asked him what was going on. Now, what do you think's in the brother's mind? Like, Is it my birthday? Was I just working so hard I forgot? I have been working really hard. Maybe Dad's throwing me a party. I mean, he's thinking he's going to get lifted up on shoulders, for he's a jolly good fellow, is going to start playing. And then it says this. Your brother has come home, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. Now, can you imagine what the older brother's thinking? You mean my scum of a brother who stole from Dad, who went to the far country, who lost everything. We didn't know if he was dead or alive. He broke Dad's heart. And then my dad is welcoming him back by throwing a party? Like, nothing about this makes sense. In fact, it says the older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. Now remember, Jesus is telling a story. He's telling a story to tax collectors and sinners, and also to Pharisees, these found people. And I'm guessing the found people are probably thinking, like, finally, somebody makes some sense in this story, right? This reckless son just goes and loses everything. Perhaps the father is even more reckless. Like, he comes back, and he just gives him everything again. He doesn't know if he's going to stay. Did you realize that? The first time he gave him everything, he took and left. Why would, when he comes back, would he just give him everything again? Well, because he's just a wreck. It's just love. Like, you're just one of me. You're one of us. Just come on. Just come on in. And I'm thinking the Pharisees are thinking, I'm with the older brother. I'm with him. Like, this doesn't make sense. This guy is a bad guy. He didn't do a good thing. Why are we throwing a party when he comes back home? But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when the son of yours has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill a fattened calf for him. My son, the father said, you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. He was lost and is found. And I don't know if you've ever read that story and you've thought to yourself, and then what? Like, it just kind of ends suddenly, doesn't it? Like, what happens to the older brother? Does he go into the party? Does he walk in and he starts dancing as well? And he's just like, bro, we're good. Dad came out. We're fine. Does the younger brother, like, take his speech and use it on the older brother? Like, listen, I didn't even want to be a son. I just wanted to be a servant. Like, what happens next? And the answer is, we don't know, because that's not the rest of the story that Jesus wanted to tell. Jesus wanted it to stop right there to make a point. There's something off here in the story. You feel like there's no closure for a reason. So at this point, we should probably back up and get some of the context for the two parables that we missed. Right? Remember who he's talking to. He's talking to tax collectors and sinners and to found people. Found people are mad because he's talking to the tax collectors and the sinners. Jesus is going to tell three stories, and he's going to be asking the question, not only is where's the hero, but what's the difference? You ever play What's the Difference in the magazines? You know what I'm talking about? Like, my kids would get, like, the highlights magazines. You ever played those at the doctor's office? We would get them, come to our house. We'd be sitting down, be reading with, like, you know, Aiden. He's just a little guy, and we're walking through this, and, like, the What's the Difference stuff would come on. Like, what's the difference between this picture and this picture? I'm like, I don't care if you're four, buddy. I'm about to take you out. Like, well, we're going to do this. Boom, 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 boom. They're like, Dad, it's crazy. It's true. My competitive streak might come out when we play What's the Difference. Jesus is going to play, like, a spiritual What's the Difference. Are you ready for this? Three parables. We've already read the third. Look and see if you can tell the difference. Back up in verse 3, it says this. Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. Jesus says, I tell you in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. That's story one. Do you see the pattern? So a sheep is lost, shepherd goes looking for him, and then there's a party. Okay? Number two, or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin. She probably throws a party bigger than what the coin was even worth. In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. So, can you tell the difference? Story one, lost sheep, shepherd goes looking for it, then there's a party. Story number two, there's a woman that loses a coin. She goes searching for it. Then she throws a party. Story number three, there is a lost son. He comes home. Then there's a party. What's the difference? See, the tax collectors and the sinners, the lost people, are saying, why doesn't anybody go after the boy? See, we often read this in isolation. But Jesus is trying to prove a point. You'll go after a sheep. You'll go after a coin. Why won't you go after your lost brothers and sisters? You'll throw a party whenever you found something that you lost. Why doesn't anybody go after the brother? See, I want to invite you to write this down in your notes. It's simply this. If the father represents God and the younger son represents lost people, then who does the older brother, the older son represent? Found people. Right? And the illustration, Jesus is saying, if you have found me, you are one of the found people. And we're supposed to wonder, why doesn't the older brother go after the younger brother? In other words, search for him. Brother, you have been off. You're breaking dad's heart. What are you doing? Come to your senses now. Come on home. I've always loved you. Can you imagine the younger brother? Man, I didn't even think you liked me. No, I like you. And dad loves you as well. Come on home. When you're reading the story, you're supposed to see that the older brother was supposed to go searching for the younger brother. But he doesn't. Instead, his thing is, well, why would you throw a party for him? Like, I've been here. I've been faithful. Why would you throw a party for this guy? The one who squandered everything. He broke dad's heart. Now remember, right, there's three parables, three parts of the parable, three characters. But Jesus is also going to make a point to us in threes as well. I wonder, perhaps you remember the very first sibling rivalry in the Bible. You go all the way back to the book of Genesis, the very beginning, the first several chapters. And there's the very first sibling rivalry. It's Cain and Abel. Cain is the older brother. Right? Abel is the younger brother. Abel, it says, brings his first and his best as an offering to God, and God accepts it. Cain brings just his leftovers, and it says God rejects it. Cain is mad, so he kills the younger brother. And then God comes to him, and it says this, where is Abel? It should be pointed out that this is now the seventh time that God has asked man in the Bible a question. Man hasn't asked God a single question yet. That should probably tell us something, shouldn't it? That God's pursuing us, and we're just kind of doing our thing. And then this is the first question the man answers back to God. How should I know? Now, I don't know much, but I don't think you should be passive aggressive with God. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not going to end well for you. How should I know? Am I supposed to look after my brother? Maybe you've heard it this way. Am I my brother's keeper? And the rhetorical answer back from God is emphatically yes. You're the older brother. You are supposed to know where your brother is. You're supposed to know where your sister is. You're supposed to know where your neighbor is. That is your job. You are supposed to be looking for them. See, here's what's interesting. I think Cain is essentially saying, well, I've got my own problems. I've got my own life. I'm busy. I've got a wife and I've got kids. I've got my own thing. You want me to look after him too? And the answer is yes. See, Cain is the first older brother. The older brother in the lost son story is the second one, and there's going to be a third. See, Paul says it like this. The son, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. In other words, would you write this down? The point of the parable is this. Jesus is the older brother we've always wanted. Jesus is the older brother we've always wanted. There was Cain, there was the older brother, and then there's Jesus, and Jesus saying, I'm the fulfillment that you've been looking for. See, we all want to know, well, when we're lost, when we've wandered off to the far country, will somebody come looking for us? When we've messed up and we feel like no one would understand and no one would forgive us, no one would understand the darkness that we're going through, Jesus is saying, I'm the older brother that will come searching for you. You are found. I see you. I know where you're at. I will go to a cross for you. I will descend the depths of hell and come back with the keys for you. Jesus wants us to know, I'm the older brother that will seek you out. And maybe you're here today and you haven't begun a relationship with Jesus. And I want you to know that Jesus invites you to respond to him by simply saying, I need to be found by you. I've got a past and I've got a history and I don't know where to go. I'm off in the far country. And Jesus is telling you today, all you've got to do is turn and I am right here for you. That would be your response today. If you don't yet have a relationship with Jesus, and we'll have an opportunity to pray for you in just a moment. But if you are found, you have begun a relationship with Jesus, Jesus is hoping for a different response from you. Jesus wants something else out of you. See, we're walking in threes today, right? Three parables, three parts of the parable, three characters. But there's also the older brother, and there's Jesus, and then there's us. Paul says it like this in Romans chapter 8. For God knew his people in advance, and he chose them to become like his son, so that his son would be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. Paul's saying, you are also the firstborn. He's not saying he's the firstborn over you. It's saying in this context, he's the firstborn among you. So that when you begin a relationship with Jesus, when you're also found, you're the firstborn. Congratulations. You might be a middle child with me, right? You might be a younger one. You're a firstborn. Welcome. Welcome to the firstborn club. Maybe you're not convinced yet. Let me show you what the writer of Hebrews says. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly to the church of the firstborn. Born, whose names are written in heaven. We are the church of the firstborn. And what Jesus wants us to know is this. Your job is to be your brother's keeper. Your job is to go looking for your sister. Your job is to create a space so that your neighbor can be found and come home. Now walk this out. So what's the older brother supposed to do? He comes in. There's music and dancing, right? Is he just supposed to run in and start dancing too? Like, we're good, bro. I don't mind that you just took all dad's stuff and you wasted it. I don't mind that I've been here working without you. Like, we're good. We're fine. No. See, Jesus is showing us a pattern. See, by the time the party has started, the older brother has already missed his opportunity. Did you catch that? Lost, search for, party. He'd already missed his opportunity. And what Jesus is saying to us is that you are to go and be the older brother. You're supposed to go and find people. Jesus is asking the question, will you be an older brother? Will you prioritize going and finding people, right? The question is, where's the hero? And Jesus is saying, I'm looking to you. If you've experienced my love, go and share that love. Now you might be saying, I'm in, but what do I do? Well, in just a second, I'm going to give you three things. There's dozens of ways that we can do this, probably hundreds. In fact, one of the things we're doing, this is not one of the three I'm going to mention, but one of the things we're praying is that God, in 2019, would you create a global partnership for us that we can start going on mission trips and echoing your love in different parts of the world. We're praying for that. One of the things we're praying for is, God, would you give us more opportunities here in the Indianapolis area and across the state to begin to echo your love in more ways than we already got to do in incredible ways in 2019. Those are wonderful ways, but I want to give you three things you could do today. Today. The first is, we talked about this last week, and it's just simply this, get on the dream team, right? You don't have to, but I'm telling you, they are incredible, and they make a difference every single week. We talked about this last week, that you get to build a house of heroes, where you get to create an environment where other people get to experience God, right? One of the ways you get to help find people is by creating that environment where people are welcomed home, and then your friends they're excited to bring their friends because it's just an incredible environment. Get on the dream team. There's a place for you in the house of heroes. The second thing I'd say is this, walk with open eyes. Walk with open eyes. In other words, when you wake up, say, God, today, help me to see the people around me the way that you see them. So when people are looking for hope, God, I don't walk by them, right? It can happen in your house. It can happen in your place of work. It can happen in your school. God, while I'm on my path today, the people that I encounter in my journey, would you help me to see the hope that they need and to step into that moment? It might be inviting, you know, can I pray for you? It might be inviting somebody to your small group as you start to get to know them and they're looking for a connection. It might be simply inviting them to church. That's why this environment's so important, why we want to get it right. So that you're like, I can't wait to invite somebody here. I looked up the statistic this week, and I wanted to make sure that I was right on it. And the stat was this, that 83% of people, when invited to church, will say yes. Did you know that? Now, it's interesting that also in the city of Indianapolis, statistics show that as many as 80% of people have no church home. So only 20% of people, the nearly 2 million people in the Indy metro area, have no church connection. Right now, this morning, they're hanging out at home. But 8.3 of them, we'll round it at 8, will say yes when you invite them. So maybe we could just pray, right? Because I think for a lot of reasons why we don't invite people is because we're afraid, right? But don't those statistics sort of like help you know that they're in your favor? Right? God, when we go ask people, we're the first two to say no, so we can just get it out of the way and get on to the next day. You with me? Come on. 8 out of 10 will say yes when you invite them to come. God, would you help me to walk with open eyes to see the opportunities to invite people to take a next step with God as I'm walking with you as well. Here's the third and final thing. It's really simple. We're going to give you that opportunity today. It's get in or lead an echo group. Get in or lead an echo group. Here's why groups are so important. Every week, you have the opportunity to practice the importance of not only having a place where you can be found, but that you're saying, I'm going to commit to you so that you don't go off to the far country. You're saying, I'm going to prioritize a relationship with other people. That I'm going to make sure that you don't fall off. Listen, everybody stumbles. We all stumble in our faith. It is really hard to stumble out of community. You get that? If someone knows you, if someone's for you, it's really hard to stumble out of community. I'm always reminded of a dear family back at our church down in Jackson, Mississippi, that every week they would come into church and they would leave. They'd come in, they'd sit in a seat and they'd leave and they would never connect. They've been doing it for years. And tragically, one year they lost their 16-year-old son and no one knew because no one knew them. So I remember our care pastors walked into my office one morning. They're telling me this tragic story of their son passing away and nobody knew it because they weren't connected to the church. And I thought what they were getting ready to say was, yes, and then they're mad that nobody from the church showed up. And what they said was the exact opposite. They said, we have not prioritized relationships, and so when we needed them, they weren't there. And so that very next day, fresh from the funeral, they came and joined a group so that they could be there for somebody else, but they also knew that they needed community. I thought, how incredible is that? See, groups provide a place for you to be known, but also provides a place where you can commit to knowing other people as well. Get in or lead an echo group. Here, one final thought as we're rounding this out. You're probably wondering what your third fill-in-the-blank is, isn't it? Some of you are like, fill-in-the-blank people. I don't think I gave it to you. Here it is. You ready for it? All right. As people found by Jesus, the church becomes the search and rescue mission for those needing a way home. As people found by Jesus, the church becomes the search and rescue mission for those needing a way home. Then our amazing production crew just leaves it right there on the screen waiting for me. Come on, Chad. Just say it. Just say it. All right. That's us. That's who we get to be. One final thought. I think all of this starts with an upfront decision. That we say on the front end, God, I want to be a person that finds other people. Are you with me? And then you wake up every day and you just make those decisions. Well, what does a person do who goes and finds other people? And you just live that out. I think it's that simple. That we just say, this is who I am. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to do it. See, I think a lot of the reason why a lot of us don't go and find people is because we don't feel found. Are you with me? I think a lot of the reasons why we don't go and find people is because we don't feel found. Now that's an emotion. That's a feeling. But it's a lie. It's not true. Because I think we're like, well, I have my own problems. I have my own busyness. I have my own struggles. I have my own stuff that I'm walking through. How can I go and find people when I don't feel found? Let me remind you of something. If you have begun a relationship with Jesus, you are found regardless of what you feel like. He knows you. He loves you. He's pursued you. He still pursues you. He's still walking with you. So even if you're walking through a dark situation, you can still find people. And let me be so bold as to say, you may never actually find the fulfillment you're looking for until you start finding people. Are you with me? That the hope that you're looking for isn't found until you actually give that hope away to somebody else. I don't know why it works this way. It's how God made us, that until we're using our lives to make a difference,
We never fully step into the maturity and the wholeness that God has for us until we step into finding people. Maybe the hope you're looking for won't be found until you start giving hope away to others. I wonder for you today, what's your response? If you don't have a relationship with Jesus yet, today's the day. He's pursued you. He's gone to every length possible. Would you say yes to him? God, I need a new beginning with you. But if you have been found by Jesus, your response to him is, God, I know found people, find people, make me that person. Let me be like Jesus. As Jesus was sent by you, God, let me be sent by Jesus every day of my life. So, Father, we look to you. God, we thank you that you are a good Father, like we've sung about this morning. You are a gracious God. You go to every length possible that we can know and experience your love. God, as we're praying today, Lord, we want to respond to you. We don't want to walk out of here hearing it, believing it, but leaving it here. God, we want to take it with us today. So I want to give you an opportunity to respond with our eyes closed and our heads bowed for just a moment. If you are a believer, you are a found person, you have a relationship with Jesus. You might be on the dream team, you might be in a group, and you're saying, God, make my eyes more open to see the opportunities around me. If your response today is, God, make me a found person that finds people, I want to invite you right now, would you just raise your hand up high? Just a response to God. It's your soul getting behind your body saying, I'm going that direction. Just raise your hand up high. I'm a found person. I'm going to use my life to find other people. Raise it up high for just a moment. Come on. Anybody else? And as we're praying today, just keep it up and just say, God, that's me. I want my life to be spent helping others experience your love. God, help me to walk with open eyes. Lord, help me to find my fit on the dream team to create an experience for people. Lord, help me to commit to a group so I can not only be found by others, but I can be a part of the rescue mission so others can know that they are found. Put your hands down. I want to give you an opportunity with eyes closed and heads bowed for just a moment. If you're looking for a relationship with Jesus, when you've heard today that he's pursued you, even when you weren't pursuing him, when you found out that he was seeking you, even when you haven't been doing all the right things, you say, I need to follow him today. I need a new start. I need to be forgiven. I'm going to ask you to do something bold. Eyes closed, heads bowed. To say, yes, count me in that prayer. If that's you, would you just raise your hand up high for just a moment? Say, today's my day. That's wonderful. Anybody else? You can put your hands down. Anybody else? Raise them up high for a moment. If that's you, you say, today's my day to begin a relationship with Jesus. Would you pray something like this in your own heart? Say, God, thank you for your great love. You say, God, thank you for going to a cross to take my punishment. Just simply say this, God, would you forgive me? Would you also say, Lord, I know that you rose up from the dead to give me new life, and today I'm reaching out for that new life. Say something like this in your heart. Say, God, today I want to follow you for the rest of my life. See, what I know is God loves that prayer. He's responding to it right now, rushing in with his love and his encouragement that you are found and you are known. Lord, for all of us, we say thank you. None of us are perfect. None of us have got it all figured out. We are people loved by our God. We're people who have been pursued by our older brother, Jesus. And so, God, our response to you is we're going to walk with open eyes so others can experience your hope as well. And everybody said together, come on, say amen. Amen. Come on, let's put our hands together for those who take some next steps with God today.